because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Eyes look at this week in the Capitol. J.R., let's start out talking about Joint Finance Committee. Mm-hmm. Last week, they heard no new money. So it looks to me like they are beginning to make some tough decisions, maybe pruning back Walker spending. Now, the goal here, of course, is to come up with $127 million in savings for K-12 aides, maybe shave the proposed $300 million to the UW. So, so far, the decisions that we know about, they are going to push a payment for that tax credit, $106 million from the current biennium in 2017, 2019. Yep. Kick the can down the this week they killed $15 million for what the governor had personally promised, the Confluence Arts Center in Eau Claire. So he goes up in a pre-elect, says I'm going to include, promises this to the Chippewa Valley.
And back in January, before his budget, he spoke to a bunch of the leaders from that area and said, you're gonna have to lobby hard for this money because it's just, it's sitting there in the budget and they might want to grab it. So he kind of pushed them, push hard for it. And we knew the day he did that, it was gone.
Well, is it gone because of the cash crunch, or is it gone because look who represents, Democrats represents Eau Claire?
No, cash crunch, plus it's kind of unusual that it's a straight GPR appropriation for a building project. Usually put those in the building budget.
True.
So it's kind of a different kind of way to do things. But whenever you put pots of GPR in the budget and it's a tight one, people are going to grab the money and do stuff with it. I mean, we knew going in there was a $2.2 billion shortfall, new demands for Medicaid, all this kind of stuff. We knew it was going to be tight. So anytime you do that, it is like easy pickings, if you will.
Yeah, that's true. And they also, they shaved his recommendation spending on the Covenant program back $9.5 million.
A lot of that was re-estimates on what it's really going to cost. Because, I mean, you know, numbers change. He put out his budget in, what, end of January, and we're a couple months later, and a little clearer picture, if you will, on cost. So a lot of that was re-estimate of cost, but it helped them pool this pot of GPR. Mm-hmm. They still have stuff to grab. I'm sure they're going to look for other places to grab it, but they're kind of slowly building a little pool of money to help them take care of K-12 and maybe, again, maybe get to UW.
And they're also going to start to spend a little bit more in the governor's budget. They didn't go along with, I think, $2.7 million in cuts to the ECB, the Communications Board.
Stored half of it, yeah.
And if they're not going to go along with anything on family care and IRIS, that's not going to save that $14 million that the governor recommended.
There's that to worry about. I mean, the big thing is K-12 is going to be taken care of, at least the first year cut.
Yeah.
So that's $127 million in categorical aids. They've got the 106 from pushing off the payment. Now, they haven't done it formally yet, but we expect them to.
Sure.
That'll be taken up probably. What they said yesterday was, we'll deal with this when we take care of DPI in one big shot, if you will. So in that payment, you delay it by a few weeks. It has no impact on property taxpayers. It has no impact on schools. In fact, it's usually made in July. All Governor Walker did was, okay, I'm moving into June of 17 to make my gap deficit look better long term. I mean, make a healthier budget, if you will. It's an accounting move. Accounting move that would be good, if you will, for once, versus the other way around.
Paying our current bills in the current biennium?
Yes.
What a novel idea.
But there's no impact, so it frees up that money, if you will, for K-12 and helps the pool at this point.
Okay, well, let's look at the major decisions that Joint Finance are going to tee up. They're going to talk about corrections, public instruction, general school aides on Tuesday, choice, charter, open enrollment. Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's going to go, we'll have a lot to talk about a week from today. And then on Thursday, GAB, now are they going to come up with a restructuring plan?
Good
what
question.
Do you hear?
I haven't got that one yet, but there's a pent-up desire to go after the GAB. Now, here's the other thing. They're also waiting for a second, a follow-up audit of the GAB with investigation, so that hasn't been completed yet. So we'll see. Be interesting, but they don't have any fans in the legislature right now, the Governor Accountability
Board. Let's go beyond that. I went to the website of Dewey Strobel, new senator, and he said the GAB has ruled against conservatives. He just wants to take it apart, and we're hearing that a lot. Department of Health Services is up Thursday. WEDIC, Housing and Economic Development. Boy, that'll be.
I mean, that's going to be the Democrats really beating up on WEDIC for its problems, but we've already know they're going to drop the merger plans because Governor Walker's asked them to. And quite frankly, Republicans weren't that thrilled about the one with DSPIS and DFI.
Yeah.
The WEDA and WEDIC one, there was some chatter of, well, you know what, this WEDIC has problems. Maybe we can fix it through this merger. But that's not going to be happening now. So what else are they going to do? We'll see. But it is going to be one of those. When you're the minority, your job is to make the majority's life difficult.
Yes.
And to raise points again and again and again. to give good fodder for your campaign ads and holding against Republicans and all this kind of stuff. And so they will have a very giant softball, if you will, to pound on Thursday with Weider.
Well, what about transportation on Thursday? Are they really going to make some key decisions? Are they going to hold those off?
They got to figure that out. Now, here's the interesting thing. Walker last week said what? I consider a fee increase a tax because you have no choice to pay it. And lawmakers, you know, talk to someone, they're like, well, look, we don't consider it a tax. And how is it more conservative to bond your way to build roads rather than paying for it as you go? Could Republicans say, look, we're going to do this. We're going to pass a fee increase, Governor, and cut your bonding. And if you don't do the fee increase, fine. You veto it, but then you cut the projects because we're not going to make those decisions. That's your problem. That could be interesting. Might he, you know, veto that fee increase and then they come back and try and override it? That could be a fascinating thing to watch, too. We haven't had that in a long time.
I don't see that's going to happen.
So those are possibilities.
I really think they're going to come up with some increase in the $75 that you and I pay to register a vehicle. They won't raise a gas tax, but they'll try to dial back that $1.3 billion in bonding to $800, $900, which is what we're bonding the current budget cycle.
They got $72 million extra, you know, so that helps a little bit.
That's true.
Yeah, helps a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, how much you go up with a fee, that kind of helps take it down some more. Then you set up that fight with Walker. And how much the hilt do you want to go against him in terms of – and the other thing is – we've heard lots of grumbling from Republicans about this budget and what it looks like and what it did. I don't think there's any issue outside of transportation that has so much grumbling going on. And so people openly hostile what the governor did with this budget did in transportation.
And then finally, just on while we're previewing joint finance, I hear they're still quite far apart on the Bucks Arena package. Are you hearing the same thing?
It seems like
a lot of heavy lifting.
Things keep moving.
Yeah.
So if they can get the locals, it's all about, like we talked for weeks, it's all about local money. Local money, local money. If they can find a way to make the local money work, it'll get done. Once they find that, it'll be nailed down.
Well, County Executive Abley was in the Capitol yesterday, on Wednesday for that meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay, to no one's surprise, ta-da, Russ Feingold announces, what, a 90-second YouTube video?
Yes.
And there were, you probably asked to talk to him like we did.
That's the way things are done anymore. You release the video. You know, that's how all campaigns start these days, it seems like.
He wants his old job back, and in 2010 he lost it. Senator Ron Johnson, 51%, Feingold, 47%. But I'm struck, so it's no surprise that Feingold wants the job back.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear? Do you believe him when he says, I want to serve more than ever? That's in that video.
Democrats will tell you that he never should have lost in 2010, that, you know, it's just a matter of the wave, he got caught up in it. They will tell you that he has had good numbers even going into the election in terms of personal approval, but the turnout was geared toward Republicans. It was a wave, and he got caught up in it. So they think that this guy still should be there. They also, I mean, if you get honest, but there are some Democrats who just can't believe that Ron Johnson beat Russ Feingold. They don't think he's worthy, if you will, of Russ Feingold's seat. So there's that dynamic. Republicans think that Feingold's basically running as a grudge. He wants to win a seat back and prove he shouldn't have lost, and that's an emotion they say you can't sustain a campaign on. Now, the flip side is Ron Johnson has a number of problems in front of him. Let's start with his poll numbers. They're not very good. He's been in office for more than
Charles 4 years. Charles Franklin, 54%, Feingold, 38%, Johnson. Go ahead.
More disturbing for him, that poll is 39% of people don't have an opinion of him after 4.5 years in office. Now, look,
Don't know of him or don't know enough about him.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
He is a freshman, but still, 4.5 years in office, you're gearing up for re-election in one of the most difficult races in the country for Republican right now.
Top
and you
four.
Aren't known.
Yeah.
By 30% of the state, that's a problem.
Right.
Russ Feingold has better numbers than Ron Johnson does. He's been on the public eye for the whole time that he's been out of office. That's an issue. Number two, the last Republican to win a Senate seat in Wisconsin presidential year was Bob Casson in 1980.
1980.
I was in the first grade when that happened. If you go back even farther, the last time it happened was in the 50s before that, and it happened twice. So there's that problem. We also, at one time in Wisconsin, we were known as like we were independent ticket splitters, right? That does not happen anymore. I went back, going back to the 60s, I think, the last time a U.S. Senate candidate won from the opposite party of who won the presidential election in Wisconsin. That was then incumbent Proxmire, right?
Okay. That sounds right.
That's right. Yep. So that tells you that whoever wins a state for president is going to probably win it for Senate as well. Oh, by the way, we become very blue or bluish in presidential races anymore. Yes, in 2004, very close. But in 8, it was 14 points for Obama. In 12, it was 7 points. The rule of thumb has been in almost everywhere that the higher the turnout is, the better it's for Democrats. But we kind of like really exacerbate that trend, if you will.
Yeah.
Now, One good saving thing for Republican news is in 2014, we had almost 2.4 million voted in the gubernatorial race, and Walker still won by 4 points. So they're feeling like, hey, we've kind of figured out a way, if you will, with our ground game to match them, and we can do okay in a 3 million turnout election. Most folks I talk to, though, think that is a very tough road to hoe for Ron Johnson, especially when he hasn't connected with moderate voters, especially when he's now getting gruff from his right that he's not conservative enough, and especially when...
He voted for Lynch, the attorney general.
Especially when you can go through any number of interest groups who are Republican-leaning, who've gone to Washington saying, Senator Johnson, can you help us with issue A, B, or C? And he said, no. You know, my job is to worry about the debt, Obamacare, these things. Go somewhere else.
Obamacare was his reason for getting into that race, he said. Now, that's going to play out much differently next year in terms of how we don't know yet how the U.S. Supreme Court's going to rule, whether Wisconsin and dozens of other states are going to have a huge problem. So we don't know. But that's going to be a key issue because he's still against Obamacare. And that's one issue. And then national security, Russ's vote against the Patriot Act, when Congress is debating potential reauthorization of the Patriot Act, is going to be another central issue. What other key issues?
Senator Brenner's bill that was just up this week to pare back on the collection of data.
I mean, data bulk collection.
So that's going on. What's interesting with Obamacare and the stimulus package that Feingold voted for, both those votes are now more than 5 years old. Are they really going to hold weight next year? Now, there are lots of unknowns. What's the environment going to be like? Who are the nominees going to be?
Yeah.
You know, if Wisconsin, is it Hillary Clinton and Scott Walker? That's a whole different dynamic, you know, than maybe another kind of race. Will it be about domestic issues? Will it be about Obamacare, the economy? What's it going to be about? That's a hard thing to figure out. That said, Feingold used to have a reputation as being this maverick, this independent, and he had was a good steward of the taxpayer dollar. That was his thing. He wrote the ad in 2004. His daughter basically called him cheap in the ad. Remember
yes,
that one?
I remember that. Yes.
You know, but by voting for the stimulus package and Obamacare, Republicans were able to undercut that image in 2010. Can they do that again? Will those old arguments work in 2016? I talked to Brad Courtney last week about this week's convention. He promised they'd bring back up Obamacare again. He called him the deciding vote that'll hang on him forever. So that's gonna be interesting. But you got the money stuff. You know, Feingold has to get back in and raise money again. There's a whole issue of this guy was Mr. Campaign Finance Reform, co-authored McCain-Feingold. Will he now dive into the super PAC world and allow them to do stuff for him?
In his YouTube video announcement, he railed against the billionaires, right?
Yes, and millionaires, so, of which Ron Johnson is one.
Yes, so how can he now take money from like these super secret,
that's the question,
off the record
groups? What happens at the National Senate Campaign Committee wants to come in and do stuff for Russ Feingold.
Right.
Before he said, no, leave me alone, let me run my own race. But
yes,
it's a different world.
It's how does he navigate
that? Now, don't forget, 2008, Barack Obama turned down for the first time, I think, in years, federal funding for his presidential race, which lifted the caps. He spent hundreds of millions of dollars. People cried out, this is wrong, and he's violating it. Didn't hurt him. So right. are people really driven by campaign finance decisions? I don't know. I do think it inflames your bases on both sides, the decisions that they make. But for the middle, they care about their checkbook, their job, their taxes, the kids' school.
Yep.
Those things drive their votes.
Good comments. Meanwhile, the Assembly, getting into some of the more emotional debates since Right to Work, debated two very emotional bills. The first one, the bill asking the federal government to approve a rule that 2/3 of purchases with food stamps must be for healthy. You and I have different definitions of healthy foods, including beef, poultry, dairy products. Let's listen to a pro and con argument that was made in the Assembly on that bill.
All she can eat is foods that are easier to digest, like yogurt and mashed potatoes. She said basically anything mushy. So when she saw this bill, she couldn't believe her eyes. She couldn't believe that Big Brother was going to be following her down the grocery store into her shopping cart and into the shopping line. She actually watched the hearing on this bill all day and was shocked that no one would consider the special dietary restrictions of people like her. If you're gonna pass this bill today, Mr. Speaker, at the very least, you need to consider an amendment that strongly takes into consideration the people of this state who have severe illnesses, who have severe dietary restrictions, and who would not be able to eat under the provisions of this bill based on the requirements.
Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. We're talking about maybe a $3.5, $4, or $5 million investment to look at a reform of a $1.2 billion program. I don't think that's out of line. And for people on either side of the aisle to demonize me or my colleagues and say we don't know what it's like to be poor, you don't know how I grew up. You don't know that my father worked for Chrysler Corporation and was laid off for months and months and changeovers, and we were on assistance at different times and had to go to the local farmer for things. So don't pretend to know where I'm coming from. 1 in 7 people, your neighbors, your friends, my family. So don't demonize me. I'd appreciate your support on this bill. Thank you.
JR, the other bill that the Assembly debated would say you must pass a drug test to apply for unemployment benefits and other job training and other public benefits. And the taxpayers, Speaker Voss told us there's $500,000 budgeted to pay for these drug tests. And he said, look, if you fail a drug test a third time, then and only then we will kick you off the benefit. So let's listen to clips, both pro and con on that issue, before I ask you, are these going to pass the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, you think requiring drug testing for public benefits programs will make you more popular? But exciting news for you, there's something even more popular than that idea. And oh yes, people would love to see us as legislators drug tested for some of their public benefits. When you take the oath of office and sign the book, and then you turn your pee in a cup. Maybe you feel like it would be demanding, or demeaning rather, to submit to a drug test. Well, after all, you're someone special, aren't you? Oh, you're a state lawmaker, and you aren't any more special than George in Wisconsin. Well, it's gonna be time to put your big boy pants on, because you're gonna be voting on it in a few minutes. If you want this so bad and you say it's not demeaning, then go first.
My speech today is obviously in support of AB 191. And it's not about being punitive. It's not about getting in line. It's not about cups that people were holding up. It's really about helping people in order to be prepared to get jobs that currently exist there in the state of Wisconsin. AB 191 does nothing more than add to those programs by screening participants for potential substance abuse. If they test positive, they will have the ability to receive state-sponsored treatment. Many times people need to face the sometimes harsh reality of their addiction before that they are really willing to accept the treatment and the help that they need to get well. AB 191 provides a way for this to happen for people who are already working to improve their lives. It can put them on to the road to recovery if they need that help and to finding gainful employment.
Okay, JR, Speaker Voss said that both now Senator Nass and now Senator Strobel voted for the students' food stamp bill when they were there. So he's painting a better future for at least the food stamp bill in the Senate. But the question is, do you expect the Senate to pass both these bills?
Food stamp died in the Senate last time. Yes, there's some new members, but the grocers still have concerns and are going to push very hard on the idea of it's going to cost us a lot of money to implement this. And oh, by the way,
do taxpayers have to pay the cost to reprogram those cash registers?
Oh, I'm drawing a blank on that.
Okay.
The other thing is,
I think they might.
You're going to have clerks in line saying you can't buy that. You know, I mean, it's put some uncomfortable situation of having to kind of be the food police, if you will, in line.
Stigma.
So that's why the grocers have concerns about it. They were successful knocking down last time. Not sure if they can, if it'll pass this time, but they're going to put up their fight really there.
And then drug tests, that's going to be considered by finance as part of the budget next week.
I mean, the Republicans are very much on board with the concept of it. Now remember, you go through a screen first to see are there any warning signs that we should test you.
Yep.
Then you get tested. They're fully on board of you have to clear these tests to get a job in the real world, so why not?
And Speaker Voss said, with this public assistance goes some basic responsibilities that I don't have a problem voting for.
And Democrats are going to say, well, if they have to do this, why don't the CEO, the companies that we give tax credits to, why don't we as lawmakers have to do it? You know, it's in some ways it's kind of a tangent argument, but they're making the point of, well, who gets to say who has to qualify and who doesn't through these drug tests and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. A new subject. JR, you're a better man than I. You spent many hours going through the new John Doe documents released by the Supreme Court. I didn't. Did you find much new in them?
No. I mean, it was interesting. We finally got to see a very redacted version of Francis Schmidt, special prosecutor, his motion to have a couple of justices recuse themselves. We don't know yet who he wanted. It's at least two. But the general picture painted is these groups now before the court have spent a lot of money in these elections benefiting a number of you guys on the court. You should not be hearing this case. So, but we kind of knew that was probably the argument anyway.
Yeah.
Unnamed movement number one has been Governor Walker's campaign. Steve Skupik is his attorney. He argued that Governor Walker was not a candidate in, for the recall until after April, when the after the GB had certified everything.
Right.
The election was in June.
June.
So that was an interesting argument of one's a candidate, candidate. And basically the point was, before you're a candidate, these laws don't apply.
Okay.
So, and oh, by the way, third-party fundraising goes on all the time in politics. Here was the one note about Tom Barrett, for example, next to Phil Neuenfeld from the AFL-CIO, which is connected to We Are Wisconsin, which ran ads benefiting Barrett. So where is their connection there?
That's the both sides do it argument.
Yeah, so
okay.
Essentially. So, but in terms of like really new stuff that we're surprised by, no, because a lot was redacted. That's the thing. A lot of it was, you know, blacked out, so you can't really see anything new. The big disclosure was back in August of last year when the
yes.
federal court put up documents it wasn't supposed to.
Yes.
That kind of opened the door, if you will, to what was really going on behind the scenes.
Okay, good. But staying with legal issues, there's a hearing today in mm-hmm. federal court on Justice Shirley Abramson's lawsuit
yes.
to again be Chief Justice, arguing that she still is. Now, I was intrigued by the filings, four filings last week, so let's mm-hmm. take a look at each of those. First, let's start with Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. The multiple changes, even the small changes, add up to a significant dislocation for justices, staff, and the people. The Wisconsin courts are, and capitalize this, are in a state of upheaval because of the uncertainty regarding who is Chief Justice and for how long. That was her affidavit mm-hmm. last week. Then Crooks, he weighed in. Short segment here. Exercise, asking the federal judge, exercise your powers to set forth such a transitional plan in order to address the chaotic, the C word, situation mm-hmm. that exists. Then you have the filing which you wrote about. Chief Justice Roggenzack said many things. She said, I am not aware of any court administrative or judicial function that has been stalled or delayed as a result of my designation as Chief Justice. And then finally, Justice Abrahamson, again fighting to again become Chief Justice, says, I have never declined to serve as Chief Justice or resigned as Chief Justice. I regarded my 2009 re-election with 59.67% of the vote as a mandate to continue the work I have devoted myself to for almost 19 years as Chief Justice. J.R. Abramson, Walsh Bradley, Crooks say there's upheaval, there's chaos. The Chief Justice says, I'm not aware of any. Who's right?
Good question, because we don't see what's happening behind the doors. And what they're arguing is, or what Bradley is arguing, is that court employees are on pins and needles, essentially, that because they don't know who's the boss and how should they react. And they're even like things like, how are we going to walk in the hearing room?
Yeah,
and where
the
are we
order
sit?
In which we enter the room?
And she's saying that Roggenzack kind of unilaterally and prematurely said, this is how we're going to do things. Roggenzack says, well, no, I'm just doing that to have, you know, make sure there's order in the court. So it shows you the, how shall I say it, the small things that they pick at each other over and they take offense to, if you will.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine somebody who's annoyed you beyond belief and you can't be in that same room without being annoyed by that person.
Right.
That's what you have with seven people in that room right
okay.
now.
Okay, and since we've had a court, the way they come in and their seating chart is interesting, mm-hmm. by seniority. So if you continue with seniority, the Chief Justice, well, are you going to continue it? Chief Justice Roggenzack, and then if seniority rules, it would be Abramson, and then Ann Walsh Bradley, and then so-and-so. So, as you say, they're talking about how do we enter the courtroom, where do we sit, mm-hmm. and Roggenzack, in her brief, which you guys highlighted, says, I never asked Justice Abramson to give up her chamber, yeah. So what level of pettiness here?
Well, it's probably a good word to use.
Is that probably a good word to
but,
use?
I mean, a lot of this stuff is based on tradition and where things are supposed to be and who does what and all that kind of jazz. I mean, the Supreme Court Chief Justice job is somewhat administrative, and it's not like you can run the entire court the way you want to.
Right.
But you decide when decisions are released.
Yeah, you make some of the
hires, you know,
you
some
of the trains run on time.
Yeah, so there's definitely some real power there. And you know, for Shirley Abramson, think about it this way. She's been Chief Justice for 20 years.
19, yep.
After running the court, those trains the way she wanted to, She now has no authority if Rogensack is Chief Justice and is being told where to sit, how to enter the room. It's probably kind of be hard to tell. Oh, there's also a tradition, according to Bradley's affidavit, that even past Chief Justices are still addressed as Chief Justice. And she's saying Rogensack told the court, you should only address me as Chief Justice
because
I am the Chief Justice.
There we go.
You know, so it's,
But maybe like Federal Judge Peterson is going to make some definitive judgment yet today.
He could be doing it right now as we speak.
That's true. Okay, now let's talk raw politics. We are going to use the photo op that Governor Walker wants us to use. We're going to put that up.
Yeah.
Governor Scott Walker meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Walker, Team Walker, wants this to be the picture that says not a thousand but a million words. Why?
Because he wants to portray himself as a strong ally of Israel. That is a very key issue, not only for Republican primary voters, but for conservative Jewish people to say, okay, I'm a friend of yours. Sheldon Adelson, out in Las Vegas. Big mega donor to go court. I mean, all these implications of Walker's trip, which, you know, there's been national stories this week saying, well, this is a photo op. He's escaping scrutiny. He's made mistakes on his trips to London. He wants to avoid being asked questions about all these things, and it's just a big old, you know, PR campaign.
The governor and his team wouldn't tell reporters where they were going, offered no cooperation, and yet offered this picture as saying, you know, we want to control the news and isn't.
Manage the message.
You
know, I mean, it's, hey, is he coming home with any gaffes? No. He came home from London punting on evolution. That was the whole story out of that. At least he comes home without people going, well, he's made a mistake on this, this, and this kind of thing. And it's, again, managing the message.
What do you expect Governor Walker to tell the Republican State Convention tomorrow that you and I will both be at the convention? Mm-hmm. What do you expect him to say?
I think he's going to stress that he's there, that he's fighting for them, that he's, you know, engaged. I think, good question. He's not going to give his campaign speech in Iowa, I don't think, on the stump, but it'll be the same themes that you've heard before, I'm sure, talking about property taxes would be lower in 2016 when he took office if his budget's passed. We're fighting for tax cuts, fighting to preserve. I mean, it's going to be the conservative message. I mean, even though he's been, you know, obviously engaged with our American revival, his state campaign still puts out emails like every week or so, fundraising pitches saying, hey, we're fighting the good fight against Washington. So I anticipate an anti-Washington speech, if you will.
Okay.
Because he's the outsider, which plays well. I mean, he said that before. You know, the state's where the ideas are born and thrive, so let's have that. And also plays into his presidential campaign at the same
time. So he's going to have a blend of national issues, but it's going to be perhaps the center of it might be our achievements here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. And think back to his State of the State address. It was written with a nod toward Washington while highlighting Wisconsin's successes.
No, it's a good term.
It was indeed.
So there's no WisPolitics stock report. You and I are going to the convention. What are you going to look for?
It's going to be, what's the reception for Governor Walker? Are people thrilled with him? We're going to do a straw poll, ask about the presidential race. How does he do in that? But mostly it's going to be one speech after another of people talking about what's happening in Madison. And, you know, it's interesting. There's this tension, if you will, among Republican lawmakers and the governor. Will that come out? And the big thing is going to be Ron Johnson. I'm sure they're going to really go out of their way to kind of highlight him and the fight for his Senate seat next year. That'll be a big priority this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Wisconsin, I tentatively has short interview with the governor tomorrow, and we are scheduled to interview U.S. Senator Ron Johnson at 11:45 at the convention. J.R., we still have to do 65 miles an hour as you and I drive to La Crosse. The 70 miles per hour bill is on the governor's desk, but...
Unless you get caught, Steve.
Oh, that's true. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for this week.